Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Today we're lucky to have not one, but two great guests. The first one is Tom Black. He's the reigning MVP of our show, and he's the head coach at Georgia University. And we're also joined by one of my all-time favorite guests and the Miami Dolphins tight ends coach, Shane Day. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
So Tom had mentioned to me that you guys often Skype and discuss coaching stuff. So I'm wondering how often you guys do this and what's the value in it, and can I be a fly on the wall for the next one?
We do it as often as Shane lets me bug him. I usually text him about three times a week, and on the third time he'll succumb and let me talk to him for about an hour. And then it's been great. Feel like most of the time we talk about motor learning or culture lately. And at least for me, it's been great. I think for him, it's a nice thing for him to do for me. But I learned a ton, and it's just really good to bounce something off someone you respect who's so good at what he does. And so for me, it's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's been a really fun process. I mean, we're doing it about once a week or once every 2 weeks, and I've learned a lot. It's been a really good process that we've had.
That sounds really cool. I am definitely jealous, and hopefully we can recreate some of that magic here.
I don't know if you want to.
Well, yeah, I think we do.
Okay.
So our topic for today is how do we actually apply all this great stuff we've learned about and heard about, stuff like motor learning, growth mindset, and more. So kind of to start with motor learning, there's this term game-like that I hear thrown around a lot, and I see people use it in different ways. So can you guys maybe just start out by defining it and give us some examples of what it looks like in reality?
You want to go first, Shane, or you want me to?
Sure, I can go first. Okay. I think game-like to me just means that you're trying to make your practice simulate the game as closely as possible. So any kind of, like in my case, any kind of drills that we have, we want it to be exactly like the game, or at least as close as possible. So that's what we're trying to do. And that's what we try to do, at least on my end, on all of the drills that we do. So we definitely talk about that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much right on. I mean, I just kind of cringed when you asked that because I'm thinking about one of the last Skypes Shane and I had with Steve Bain, who knows a lot more about this than any of us.
Yeah.
And we were trying to pick his brain on dynamical systems and transfer and how game-like is game-like. And Steve was kind of grabbing his hair in frustration. So like, if he feels that way trying to explain it to us, it's kind of intimidating thinking how we're going to explain it. But I agree with Shane. It's game-like is game-like. I think I can't speak for Steve, but I think he would say it's the same internal energy systems you would use in a game. It's the same perception you would see and experience in a game, and it's the same choices you would make in a game. I don't know. Do you think that's about right, Shane?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The same context, the same pressure.
Whoa, you have. Exactly right. Hey, this is recorded, right? Awesome.
Exactly.
Is that not how it normally goes?
Yeah,
pretty Shane
much.
Says I'm right? Or
yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
What is internal energy systems? What does that mean?
I think Shane can explain that better than me because I think he understands that better.
We've been talking, one of the main subjects we've been talking about the last couple of months is like complex biological systems or ecological systems, and how basically everything that you do in practice is not going to transfer unless, you know, you take all those variables into account. So like you have the psychological performance, you have the physical, the physiological, the motor learning aspects, and you kind of have to take all of those into account. Otherwise, you're not going to have complete transfer. So that was one of the big conversations we had with Steve Bain on was, you know, all those different factors, because it gets pretty complex pretty fast.
Yeah.
And trying to manage all those variables in a practice situation, or even trying to organize a practice to take those into consideration, we've learned a lot by talking to him because it's just a very complex system.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing I've taken from it, again, Shane, jump in if I'm saying this wrong, but so I think if we go by like schema theory, what, you know, Dr. Schmidt taught, and, you know, what we understand of random and variable practice, I think that's a really good really good working model. That'll create some really good practice conditions. But it seems like with dynamical systems, that's not completely correct, where there's not this ultimate motor program that you store in your brain and you start applying to all these random situations. Instead, there's just kind of what we said before. There's your perception of the skill in that very moment and the response you choose to do. So like one thing Steve Bain told us was, you know, there's not enough brains in the world to store every specific motor pattern for every specific situation. So when you think of it that way, and I might be saying it more complicated than I probably am than it needs to be, but when you think about it that way, you just understand how specific things actually are and how important it is for the player to be in just 5,000 situations in practice and try to apply a similar solution. So basically, you know, the straight and simple platform or the four-step approach, to try to apply that solution to the 1,000 different situations in the game, which is going to create 1,000 different slightly different solutions to the slightly different solutions to the same approach or to the same platform. So, and I don't know, I hope I'm making sense, but when you think of it that way, you can understand how specific things are and how important it is to be game-like and to put the athlete in situations where they can find all these novel different solutions. So I don't know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm curious, what are some of the ways you think people maybe hear this information and then misuse it, or I don't want to say abuse it, but like they feel like they're practicing game-like, but they aren't? Where do you think some of the errors are there?
Shane, you go.
Yeah, I think there's some real subtleties to all the motor learning concepts. And I find like when I have conversations with people, it seems really clear. And then I'll go watch them try to execute those in a practice situation. Yeah. And sometimes you see that they're misapplied because they are subtle. Like the theories on paper, you know, they sound pretty easy to follow and all that stuff. But then when you see how it plays out, a lot of times they may be in line with one motor learning principle, but they may be violating two or three others. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard unless I watch. I find it's really hard unless I'm watching people practice to actually see how it all plays out. So
can you think of some ways where you guys have maybe misused it or misunderstood it?
Never, John. I understand this perfectly.
I just thought of five right now.
Me and Franz Bosch and Bernstein are just right there to it together. I think that first is the point. I mean, I'm a poli sci major who's been, you know, I don't even know if I've been coaching 20 years yet. I have a long way to go. So I'm victim number one in terms of misapplying things and trying to figure it out and get better. So I think that's an important message, because we're all messing it up and trying to figure it out and get better. But I think in terms of misapplying it, I mean, I think the biggest trap is, a couple of traps. I mean, trying to make practice perfect, you know, trying to get perfect reps, that's going to lead you to probably want to start blocking drills or getting out of game like conditions pretty quickly. You know, Shane could step into that also. And I think another trap, that's my main one. I lost my train of thought. So can you think of other, Shane?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other big one is, you know, part whole, which I know you want to make everything as whole as possible and you want to have limited progressions. But I think a lot of times people get kind of lost in that, because there is a little bit of a progression, especially at the beginning when you're first teaching a skill. And yeah, I know I lose sight of that sometimes. I mean, I can look back on several times in my career. I'm obviously still a work in progress, like Tom was mentioning too, because I've made all these mistakes that we're talking about hundreds of times. And even once in a while, I'll find myself now saying, hey, is this too much of a progression? How quickly can I get to a game-like situation? Like, how quickly is that? And you're also always kind of managing the confidence of the athlete.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's always an issue. Like, you know, Tom and I had a conversation last year, and we were talking about, like, sometimes you'll get athletes that have been taught a certain way. And so when you go into game-like training, like, they haven't been taught that way, so they have no confidence. And
it's overwhelming.
Quickly. Yeah, it becomes overwhelming quickly. And so then you're kind of managing that. You have to manage the confidence of the athlete and try to get them caught up with the rest of the athletes in the progression or the way that you're trying to teach stuff. So that comes up all the time for me, especially at the beginning.
Those are my follow-up questions down the road. You're taking them. Dang it.
Sorry.
Yeah, Shane, I was going to ask about that. Like, one of the big resistances as athletes we have is that you know, block training feels so good. I can get in a rhythm and a groove. Is there any value in kind of doing some blocked before competition to build that confidence, or is it just false confidence?
Yeah, it's just false confidence. But
I agree.
The issue is, like, especially like in my particular room now, like we turn over guys a lot. So like the guys that have been with me for a year or 2 years or for at least a little while, they understand the whole process. And when we get new athletes that haven't been accustomed to that and they're used to, man, I had a couple this year that they really want to feel good about what they're doing. Yeah. So when they're messing up, they're really self-conscious and they don't want to let the team down and they don't want to let the coach down. And so you're spending a lot of time just to explain to them, no, it's okay. Like, this is part of growth. You want to make mistakes. You've got to try. And we want to make it as hard as possible so that it transfers. But that, when you get a new person that's not acclimated to that, it just takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of getting them up to speed with the rest of the guys. But I really don't think there's any value in that. And I think the longer it takes for you to cut the cord on that, the worse off you are, because it just gets played out longer and longer and longer. Just do it right away and then explain to them the mindset, hey, it's okay. You're going to make mistakes. I'll take them early on. Just give it your best effort and keep trying, and we're going to make it really hard on you. But in the long run, you're going to make a lot better gains, a lot quicker.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with, I mean, if you're starting a match and you need to warm up and you're doing some block practice because you have 5 minutes and you got to get a sweat going, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think if you feel like you need those block reps or you can't perform, then, you know, I think that's a problem. Now, I don't know if you're kind of making that distinction, Shane.
Yeah, I think it does quickly become a crutch.
Right.
Like I agree with what Tom's saying. Like it, like that's been my, like they think they need that, and if they don't have it, they're not going to be successful. And in my mind, you want to build a resilient mindset that no matter what the conditions are, they can perform. And so there's a balance, like Tom's. Like when you're warming up, you're warming up. You can do a lot of things to warm up. So, and I think that's fine.
So then, how do you adapt when you're working with someone who's came from that blocked practice structure? Are you doing like little tutorials, like giving them some motor learning background, or is it like in more in the practice setting, like this is what game like feels like? What does it look like, I guess, when you're trying to adapt those players?
Yeah, so sometimes I'll give them a little bit of a heads up if they're new to it, but a lot of times I just throw them in, and it really depends on the individual, because a lot of guys, they'll just respond to whatever you're doing and it won't bother them that much. And other people, you can tell right away that they're really stressed out. And then when that occurs, that's kind of when I'll have the side conversations. The way that our structure is set up in the National Football League is we don't have a lot of time, like the meeting times are very limited. And so we kind of have to teach to the fastest learners. And then, like I said, I'll have side conversations on the way to the field or during stretch or when we're eating breakfast or whatever, just to let them know, you know, what we're trying to do. And I try really hard to like really build good relationships with the guys so that they, at least initially, and as we develop it, they get trust in what I'm doing. And even if they don't trust it in the moment, they're like, okay, this guy, you know, he's on my same page. He's trying to help me become the best player I can be. And so they kind of give me some leniency there as far as getting through it. And then when I can see they're really stressed out, I'll have a direct conversation, say, look, you know, just what we just said a second ago. Hey, this is growth mindset. This is what's going to happen. And don't worry about it. You know, just try to take the pressure off them, because the most difficult thing, especially in team settings, is they don't want to, especially like veteran players, they don't want to look bad in front of their teammates. And if you're asking them to do a new technique that they're not familiar with, I mean, that's part of the process. They're going to look bad. And so I just try to take that stress off by saying, hey, just it's on me. If you mess up, it's on me. And I'll take it until they're at a point where they can kind of at least develop some sort of competency in that new technique.
Yeah, and I feel like that trust is really important. I can picture in my career, like indoor, playing with like a coach right behind me and just like thinking like if I'm shanking balls or whatever, like he's judging me, versus like, no, trust that it can be tough and that's how I'm gonna get better, rather than like hoping that server serves easy so I look good in that drill or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, I think you hit that on the head. I mean, like one thing, I mean, I think what we're talking about is how do we challenge our players with an appropriate task while having a relationship that allows them to get after that, right? You know, I mean, it's
yes.
If the task is challenging and the relationship's bad, I don't feel safe around my coach. I feel like I'm getting judged. It's really hard for me to get after it because I'm thinking about this critical environment I'm under, right? And if the task is low and the relationship's really strong, then I'm gonna feel great about my coach and I'm gonna be really happy and stuff, but I'm not gonna be getting much better. So I mean, getting a little sideways, but I mean, my impression of the 1950s and 60s, you know, like we have, like, it just seems like there's this task, and the relationship, like, you know, forget about the relationship. It's going to be whatever the coach says, just deal with it. And we've kind of gone in this era where it's like all relationship now, you know, and that, you know, the task, it's like, well, it seems like the task doesn't matter as much as the relationship, but I think it's both. I think you need a challenging task, which is where the motor learning comes in. How do we create this challenging task that's really going to help you grow? And then how do I create this relationship with you, you know, that we can get better together, that you really feel like you can get after it, you know, that we can get into this journey together? And I think that's where coaching really gets hard, when you can really marry those two things. And, but yeah, I hope that's not too much of a sideways talk, but I think that's what I'm like, when I see Shane coach, I see a guy who's really working hard to make a safe environment, to let the guys know, like, you know, it's not just okay to make mistakes. Like, we have to make these mistakes to get to the end point, you know? And then once we get to the end point, there'll be another end point. We'll make more mistakes to get there. And that's okay. That's the way it's supposed to be. We're fired up about that. And I think because the guys know he really means that, and because he celebrates that, they can let it rip and they can get onto these really challenging tasks. So when I see him coach, I see a guy who's really doing both. And, you know, and I think that's when coaching gets, you know, really, really hard. I think coaching is always hard, but to me, that's what I aspire for, you know, to try to be really good on those two levels. And, you know, obviously got a long way to go, but that's the deal.
And I think that might be kind of an answer to this question, but if you guys think of any other examples, talking about growth mindset specifically, let's say you get your players to read the book. It's a pretty simple concept. They get it. But where do you go from there? Like, how do you incorporate it into practice and into, I guess, everyday life?
Yeah, that's the hard part, because like the book is the easy part. Like, you read the concept, you're like, oh yeah, no doubt. You can't have a fixed mindset and get better, and you're going to protect your ego and all that stuff. But how it plays out in a real situation, a real life situation, I think is a lot trickier and depends a lot on the individual. You know, where they're at on that spectrum of, I mean, everybody's, you know, somewhere on that spectrum. They're not either growth or fixed. They have aspects of both, and depending on how, you know, what environment they're coming from, I mean, that has a big influence on it too. But I think it's really tricky. It's not as easy as just presenting, here's growth mindset. It's okay to make mistakes. Like, it's a continual process that you have to continue to work with individual athletes. And they all are more, some are more open than others to that thought process, depending on their own experiences.
And John, I think I heard you, if you guys read Culture Code, or you guys right in the middle of it?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through it.
Yeah. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's awesome. I want to hear more about, Popovich, like that, the stuff with that was, I thought that was really powerful. Like, hearing him talk after, I think the Spurs lost, what was it, game six? And
yeah,
I don't know, after tough losses, like his first reaction, like the next day at practice, is just to check in with the guys. And it was like no basketball stuff. It was just, I'm here for you. You know, how you feeling? Like, that sort of stuff was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that book just knocks it out of the park. I know Shane really loved it too. And, you know, I think he had that good formula of safety, you know, vulnerability, then you can get to the challenge. And like, one thing I really struggle with is the vulnerability part. Like, I'm really trying to push myself there to get better, because I do mess up all the time and I'm always making mistakes, and I need to be better about verbalizing that and letting the players know that I know that. Cause if they can see that I'm messing up too, and I'm trying to figure this out, then the room can relax and they can get a lot better. And, you know, I just don't do that stuff enough. So that's just an example of, I completely embrace the growth mindset concept and I'm trying to do it every day, but there's several ingredients of it that if I don't get better at it, it's not going to be a strong enough culture, you know, in the gym. So I think that's when it gets hard, just trying to analyze, you know, how that growth mindset is actually working within you on a day-to-day basis. Cause I can see where I'm still fixed and I need to become more growth. And, yeah, but I think that's the exciting part too. You know, it never ends. It's a lifelong process, but, it's really, really hard. I mean, there's lots and lots of levels to go with it.
And Tom, when you're talking about, I guess, examples of vulnerability and how you are fixed or, you know, whatever, is that from your daily life you're saying this is where I messed up, or is it actual, like, coaching mistakes you're making that you're sharing with the team?
Both, all of it. You know, I mean, in between the task and the relationship, I think we're all different. You know, for me as a coach, I can – my default is to get really heavy on the task. Like, hey, this is what we're working on. Let's get going. And I can skip the relationship part. You know, I mean, there's times where I know I made a mistake, or I didn't say things correctly, or I didn't pay enough attention to someone, and I'll just kind of gloss over it because we got to get going. And this kid knows, you know, they know where I'm at, they know what I mean, but they don't. You know, I need to attend to that relationship first. So, you know, so that's my challenge, but it's a good process. You know, when I slow down and say, hey, I messed that up, or hey, this is what I meant, I think I upset you here, I didn't say this right. I can see them relax, you know, and I can see our relationship get better, and I can see the learning start to improve. So I think, you know, that's what I mean by it. But that's going to happen in my house with my wife. You know, I mess that stuff up all the time, or with my kids. You know, it's a day to day thing, which is what it's supposed to be. You know, we're trying to teach a mindset that's going to help everything.
What do you guys do with athletes who come in who, you know, been in different programs and maybe a very result oriented program, and for sure our culture is very result oriented. So I'm wondering, I'm guessing it takes a while to break through. Is it that you're just, you know, consistently sending the same message, or you're trying to like kind of attack it in different methods, or what have you guys found to help like break through with these people, these kind of like deeply rooted fixed mindset issues?
There's no one in the NFL like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know that there's a strict formula for it. Like, my method is I just go. So like, I don't really think about it too much. I try to really, like on the last podcast, we were talking about mindfulness. I try to just be present in all the conversations and try to notice that early on. And then just, well, I think the word you mentioned that's really important is consistency. You know, if you're consistently always focused on the process and you're not validating the outcomes, even when you're under fire, right? Because the good thing in the NFL is like, it is very outcome driven. Like you have to win games or you're fired, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of coaches are like that. So when other people are saying it's outcome, and you're still saying, no, it's not, it's process. And as long as you don't give into that temptation to go to the outcome side, I think as long as you're consistent, they start to figure it out. And I think that just develops naturally over time, because initially in the relationship, they're not going to trust you. They're going to hear what you're saying. They're going to say, I've heard this 1,000 times. I've seen 27,000 PowerPoints. It's not outcomes, it's process. And then, you know, the first thing that goes wrong, a coach is screaming and yelling at him and saying, you're an idiot because you didn't do this. And so you just have to be consistent with it. And eventually through enough repetitions, enough time together, you know, they start to develop, okay, this guy's for real. He really does mean process. It's not like I've heard from everybody else that they're just giving it lip service. He really means it. So that's been my kind of experience. And then kind of like you mentioned, like there's a million different ways to do it. And it just depends on the athlete. I try to just pay attention to how they're receiving the message. And if it doesn't work, I go to the next thing and the next thing. And I just try to be consistent with the message.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you on that, Shane.
Okay.
Especially at that level of the NFL, have you had some experiences where the relationship came because you were improving the task? Where on, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Where most levels of skill, like below that, you really have to get the relationship right first. But sometimes with elite players, it can work the other way sometimes.
Well, we're saying relationship, and I don't know. To me, like I find it more to what you're talking about. I'm much more task oriented. And I think of it more of connection. So yeah. Like if I'm with a player and they have an issue and I can diagnose the issue and fix the problem, then there's an immediate connection and there's an immediate buy-in, like, hey, this guy's helping me get better. Like this is working.
Right.
And so like, I don't really, like when we say relationship, I don't really focus on trying to have a relationship with the players. It just kind of happens organically. Like, you know, if I see him, you know, I talk to him and all that stuff, but I'm trying to really, to me, it organically occurs through the task. Like, I mean, you've seen me, so you kind of know, but it's more task. Like, I'm not having, in my world, I'm not having, like, a lot of separate conversations that aren't about football. I mean, they come up organically, and I do care about my players, and I want to talk about all that stuff. But if I can help them on a specific task, I think that really builds the trust a lot quicker than if I try to do it outside the context of football. You know, like, because that doesn't necessarily translate. It's like transfer that we're talking about in motor learning. Like, if I can care about you, like, as a person and your family and all that stuff, it doesn't necessarily mean that I can help you become a better football player. So I always kind of start with the football. And I do care about all that other stuff as well. Like, I care about my players on every level as a person and as an athlete and everything else. And I just try to show that by being present. But my first opportunity to do that is through football. Mm-hmm. And And that's where I try to go. I don't try to do it outside the framework of just naturally, organically running into them or talking to them and just checking in to see how they're doing. And I try to focus most of it on football, like in the context of teaching something or a skill or a fundamental.
Shane, what if you have the appropriate task and, you know, you think it's good stuff, but it's really uncomfortable for them and it's making them worse in the short term? What about in that scenario?
Yeah, I had that scenario all year with a couple of players. I had a couple different players that were veteran players that had played in the NFL for over 10 years, and they were not comfortable. And the thing that was interesting was they were very open to doing whatever I recommended. And so they wanted to change. They wanted to try new stuff. They were in a new offensive scheme, so we were asking them to do different stuff than they had done in the past. And it was a struggle for all of us. I mean, it was a long year in that regard because they're trying. They're like, "Coach, I'm trying to do what you're asking. It's just not coming." You know, and so that was very difficult. And so a lot of the time, you know, we're just talking about, you know, I'm trying to not let them get frustrated, because when you try something for multiple weeks in a row, right, and it doesn't show up in the game, they don't think they can ever get it. And so I just keep trying to say, "Hey, listen, it's going to come. Don't worry about it. It's not going to show up right away. We knew it was going to be a long-term process because you have 10 years built up of doing this skill a different way. So it's not the dominant motor pattern yet. I mean, we've got to build up strength and coordination. We've got to build up all this stuff before it's going to show up in games." And especially because football, like, games are totally different than practice. Like, the physicality of it, like practice, once you get out of training camp, like, I mean, there are a lot of non-padded practices where you're not really hitting people. And then you get in a game and guys are going full speed. It just takes a long time for that to show up. So I just try to stay really patient. And some of the stuff didn't show up for 10 weeks, you know, and then it'd show up and I'd be like, "There it is. We got it." You know, and they'd be fired up. They'd be like, "Coach, I got it." And I'm like, "Yes." And then it wouldn't be there next week. And so, like, I realized, like, it's even a longer process than I thought it was going to be, which it really reaffirmed to me that, like, you don't have time to not practice game-like scenarios. Like, if it's going to take 10 weeks, we got to get as many game-like scenarios as quickly as possible so we can get that transfer up to where it shows up in the games. Because if it doesn't show up in the games, it's not helping us. But it's a struggle, you know, and their confidence goes down, and they're used to being very successful at what they do, and all of a sudden they're not being successful trying your technique, and you're saying, "Hey, keep trying it, and it's hard. I think that's a big part of why it doesn't happen, because they don't fully buy in. Because they don't see the results right away, and so they're like, "You know, I'm never going to get this." And even if they're trying hard, I think in the back of their mind, unless they're fully committed to it and they own it, I think that's a real issue. I mean, that's something that we were talking about the other day, Tom, with Adam. Like, that's a big deal.
I was just thinking that. I kind of have two parts to that. Well, I think, John, I think what you just asked, I think that's the good stuff. I mean, that's what coaching is all about. You know, so we talk about the gap. You know, here's where you're at, and then maybe that's the bottom line, and then there's a line just on top of it. Here's where we want to get to by the end of practice today, and that gap in between, that's where it's uncomfortable. And, you know, our ability to get in there as a coach and a player and to do it together, that's coaching. And there's just no way that process is going to go smooth every day. There's just no way. There's going to be some ups and downs and confusion, and sometimes the coaching is going to be better than the players learning. And sometimes the players learning is going to be better than the coaches teaching. But, you know, like, you just get through it together. You learn through it together. I think that's the meat of it. And that's why the task and the relationship together at the same time, you know, are so important and what coaching is all about. And at the same time, I mean, when you're talking about that, Shane, I mean, it was inspiring for me. You know, when we got on the Skype with Adam O'Neill, who's been on this podcast, I mean, just to hear you talk about how you're struggling with that player and for Adam to give you tips. And I know how much you study this stuff, and I know how passionate you are about your players, and to see you, like, really processing what Adam was saying, and you're making notes, and I could see how you were going to coach that guy next time. And all I could think of was, like, that you and that player might've had some bad days, but that guy is so lucky you're his coach. I mean, just what a learner. You're going about it the exact same way you're asking him to go about it. And that's the deal. It's not going to be smooth every time, but you're diving in the gap and you're going to figure it out, and you guys will be better for it. So.
Yeah, I was pissed. Because the season's over. The season's over, and I really, you know, like Tom said, I really try to really connect and see it from the player's perspective. And as Adam was talking about it, I was like, he's basically saying you didn't go far enough. And I was like, damn it, he's right. You know, and but the season's over, so, you know, lesson learned. But it you know, like Tom said, I'm still making tons of mistakes every day, and I'm trying to learn. And I'm trying to narrow that gap, and we're having more of these conference calls and more conversations like this. And I think that's a big part of it too, is if you can get a group of people that are all interested in investigating all this different stuff and discovering this stuff, like you can bounce ideas off them and get different perspectives. And that's what I've taken a lot from our conversations with Tom and with Adam and with you guys right now. I mean, I'm learning a ton just right now. It's awesome.
And Shane, you said didn't go far enough. What do you mean?
Well, so what Adam was referring to was there was a particular player, and as a coach, he wasn't doing it the way that he had to do it to be successful. And so I would keep, you know, saying, hey, this isn't it. And he's like, yeah, that's not it. And what Adam suggested was, he used this analogy. He said, hey, what color is the sky outside right now? And I go, it's blue. He goes, well, I'm looking at it in California and it's green. And he's like, and here's the thing, we're both looking and we both think we're right. He's like, so if you think that what the player's doing is wrong and he thinks it's right, he's like, you need to go over to his shoes. And what I should have done is let the player fail. So I should have gone over to his side and said, okay, let's use your technique. Let's see how it works. Right. And then he comes back and I say, did it work? And he's like, no, it didn't work. Okay, let's try it again. And it doesn't work. And then at that point, then say, okay, well, let's try this different way, because now we both would be moving in the same direction instead of me standing over to the left and him to the right and me saying, that's not it. And him saying, yeah, that's not it. I really should have let him go completely to failing with his technique so that he could see that it wasn't going to work. And that never happened. And when he said that, I was like, that's exactly right. Because me and the player, we both were on the same page. We talked about how hard it was going to be. We talked about how we're going to do it. He seemed to be bought in, but I didn't give him the opportunity to come over to his side, see it from his perspective, let him fail at it, or maybe he was successful at it. I mean, he wasn't, because it didn't work, and just let him fail until the point where he saw it as a failure, and then that created the opportunity for him to see a new way to do it and have him fully buy into it, which didn't happen. And so that's when Adam said that, I was like, that's exactly, I didn't go far enough with that. I tried to see it as a coach, but I never really stepped into his shoes and saw it from his perspective to see why it wouldn't work and to get him to see it the way it had to be, because it didn't work. I mean, we just went through all of our cut-ups and we're all disappointed with how that particular skill ended up on the film.
And if you guys do that and his way does work, do you course correct? Or I mean, what happens then?
Well, I'm real open on technique. Like, I have a specific way in my mind of watching a lot of players. I have sort of a profile or a model in my head. But to me, like, it's more constraint based, meaning that if the guy can perform the skill, however he does it, you know, we use the term like self-organizing, like however he does it, because everybody's body is a little bit different. If he can do what I'm asking him to do, the task, and he can move like a defensive end out to the numbers, I really don't care how he does it. But I could see that the way that this player was doing it wasn't going to work, because it just wasn't going to work, because his hands were wrapping and guys were pushing him back. But yeah, I'm really open on technique. I have a series of principles just like you guys do. And I try to get, I think most 99.9% of all blocks are going to work within that context. But if a guy has a different way, because he's an outlier, maybe he has unique physical characteristics that allow him to do it in a different way, then we'll do it that way. I'm very open that way.
And Tom, I guess, how open are you? I mean, have you had situations, in my mind, you study this stuff and you're pretty, knowledgeable about your technique and specific with your players. Are you open to kind of personal mechanics or in that way?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the game's going to continue to evolve and athletes are going to continue to find new solutions. So you got to be really open to that and make sure you're looking for those, because that's where the innovations are going to come from. It's not going to come from a coach thinking about it. You know, it's going to come from a player actually doing something and people going, aha, oh, that's a better way. So I do think you have to be really, really open. But I also think human beings in general follow patterns, you know, there's some movements that, you know, if you don't do them, it's just going to be hard to be efficient. So it kind of comes down to what Shane said, you know, is it working? Is it not? And generally there are some general movement patterns, that generally are going to help, you know, 98% of the population, you know, like perform in movement. So, and that's, you don't want to command the athlete there. You want to guide them there. So I think it's a combination of both. You know, if they can't perform a certain skill because the movement just isn't efficient enough, then you try to guide them to the more efficient movement. And then you also want to be open enough for those outliers to create that next play, you know, to that next play that sets the new standard. So yeah, I think it's a balance.
That was part one of our interview with Tom Black and Shane Day. Join us next week as we learn more. You can follow us on Twitter at Coach Your Brain or Facebook.com/CoachYourBrainsOut. Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen. This is part two of our conversation with Georgia University coach Tom Black and Miami Dolphins tight end coach Shane Day.
So with this method of coaching with game-like reps and random reps, it seems like, and especially when you're pushing people to change their technique, frustration is a pretty common theme and something that comes up a lot. Do you think frustration limits learning, or is it a necessary part of it? And do you guys have like kind of cures for frustration, or do you try to get rid of it so they can get onto learning faster?
I don't have a cure for frustration. Yeah.
Dang
it. I think we all feel it. Like, that's part of being in the gap. I mean, again, it's not the cure. I think the method is, you know, empathy and connecting with the emotion and helping teach them through it. Cause, you know, as coaches, we're going to feel frustration if we're pushing our abilities also. But I do think, I mean, Billy, John, you guys can correct me. You're living it as players, but I do think it's possible to push yourself and not feel frustration, to really understand the process and to know that it's going to pay off. I think it's hard to do that all the time, but I do think as a learner, you can get to the point where you start feeling yourself on the edge and know that it's going to lead to a really good place and to kind of almost be grateful to be in there. But what do you guys think?
I think a practice or two, no problem. I'm going through a whole season with Shane. It gets a little tougher.
Fair enough.
I will say this. The one thing that I found with frustration that we really dove deep into this year was we really tried to apply mindfulness in the tight end room. Yeah. And that did help us a lot.
Yeah.
Because if you can, everyone's going to feel frustration, but if you can let it go in 1 second instead of 5 minutes or an entire practice, I think it really helps speed up the learning curve.
Yeah. I think also too, I think if you feel like you're circling on the same task all season long, I mean, you have every right to be frustrated, you know, for sure. Something's going wrong, you know, either in the teaching or the learning or both. But if the target keeps moving in a direction that allows you to perform higher and higher and higher, I mean, you can't do that without pushing yourself. And I don't know if you guys have ever felt like that, like you've been able to, even though it's kind of a windy road, you feel like the target keeps moving up, you've been able to keep pushing yourself. And have you guys had any experience like that in the game?
Johnny?
Maybe not.
Yeah, no, clarify that. What do you mean by that?
For hitting, you know, for example, like it, or any skill, you know, have you felt like you're working through something, there's some frustration, but you got that task down and that opened up new possibilities to the game, then you started working on something else and you felt the same discomfort, but it was a new task and you kind of remember that, oh, I felt this before, this is just what the learning feels like, you know, and then you conquer that and then there's another task, you know, where you feel the same frustration of being in the gap, the same challenges of being uncomfortable, but the target keeps moving up.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. You feel that. And I think that's the time you want to kind of, like, when you're going through it again, you reflect on it like, all right, I've experienced this before. I know what it feels like to be really frustrated and not be able to perform the way I want to. But I know if I stay with it and I stay mindful about it, then I can get to a place where I'll be better. So, and then I think having like the support system around is the biggest part. Like, I think Tommy really helped me a ton with that. But I think it's easy to lose track of that and just kind of live in your frustration and not see the light at the end of the tunnel if you don't have that support.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you guys had players who don't buy into it, like say the mindfulness stuff or the growth mindset? They don't want to read books. They don't want to hear lectures about the brain. they just want to side out or they just want to hit people really hard? What do you guys do with that?
I started the last one, Shane. You go on.
Well, I've been very fortunate. I haven't had anybody that's, I mean, they may or may not have bought into everything, but they have not really, like, come at me and said that they haven't. Everyone's been pretty open. I mean, I think on all those things, the growth mindset and mindfulness, like, they see pretty quickly how that helps them. And especially when you're trying to connect it, you know, to football or to volleyball, like, they see that right away. Like, they see that when their emotions are out of control, they've lost three or four plays because they're seeing red. So once they see the possibility and then they practice a little bit and they can eliminate that, I think there's pretty buy-ins pretty fast. And growth mindset, I think the theory and the concept, I mean, once you explain it, it's pretty obvious that that's true. It's just a matter of getting to that place. I think that takes a lot longer. But for the most part, everybody I've talked to has pretty much seen those as factual things.
Yeah, I like it to be an organic process because, I mean, that's how it is for me. And, I mean, John and Billy, I mean, I've seen you guys over the years. I mean, the way you guys approach your craft now is, you know, so much deeper and, you know, more focused than it was, you know, 5-6 years ago. But, you know, it's slowly built as you guys have, like, continued to learn stuff. And, you know, it's the same for me. I mean, I learned so much about mindfulness from Shane. And I can see I'm just scratching the surface. I have so much further to go. But it's, you know, it's me diving into it and adding different pieces of that into my life and into my coaching. And that's kind of how I want it to be for my players. I mean, you can't just dump it all on them, you know, but once you show them a little bit and how it helps, then hopefully they start looking for more and you start attaching it to other things. So I think it's, you know, it's gotta be an organic process for them, just like it is for us.
What about with, say when you've been with the program a number of years, Do you feel like say for your seniors, like they've heard this message maybe 4 years in a row and the freshmen, it's their first time hearing it. How do you kind of balance that? Or is it always just fresh stuff?
In like a college setting?
Yeah. I just wonder like I feel like, oh, well they've heard, like I've given this growth mindset kind of talk before, like are the seniors just sick of hearing about this?
Yeah.
And the freshmen have like a completely different perspective. They have no experience with it. So like, I guess how do you introduce that or present that stuff in a group setting?
Well, I think that's the point. It's not about the talk. It's about how it applies to you individually. So I don't think it's about, you know, this lecture that you give, you know, it's about how this applies to the freshmen, how this applies to the seniors. And hopefully the seniors, you know, have reached a certain maturity with it, that the freshmen want to be that, you know, and they're attracted to it and they want to learn more. So obviously, I mean, you're going to introduce your core values. You're going to introduce what the program's about. I mean, you definitely have to do that. But what mindfulness is for that senior who's been in your program 4 years is hopefully, you know, at a different level than what it is for that freshman coming in. And that's why it's interesting. I mean, you're talking about mindfulness for all 4 years, or you're talking about hitting and passing and learning, but what learning means to you from day one to day 2000 is way more nuanced, way more subtle. And that's why the same topic stays really, really interesting. You know, that's why coaching never gets old, I think. I don't know. What do you think, Shane?
No, yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean,
that's it. And you're saying things, man. That
I know.
I've just been waiting my whole life.
This really happens. But
it's false confidence.
Yeah, seriously. False. Fixed.
Yeah, but I agree. And the lecture part, like, there's not really a lecture, like, right? Like, it's a five, to me at least, like, it's a five-minute introduction. Like, okay, here's the growth mindset. This is what it means very quickly. And then you're just pointing to it the rest of the time. So, like, you know, I don't have seniors and all that, but I'll have guys that have been with me for 2 years, guys that have been with me 3 years or 1 year. They're new to the program. Like, they hear me use the term, I define it quickly. And then it's just going to come up like, hey, this is not growth mindset. You've got to take chances. You're playing safe. You've got to do this. Or, hey, this is why we're doing mindfulness right here. You just got this personal foul. You hit this guy. Like, you can't, this is going to cost us a game. You can't do this. And so, like, once you introduce the concept, I think it's more of just, it's naturally and organically going to come up because guys are going to get mad and they're going to have emotions. I mean, that's part of the game. So I think it's just, you keep dealing with it. And then obviously the guys that are newer, that don't have the technique as well as the other guys, like, you're going to have more opportunities to coach that, like, one-on-one. You're going to pull them to the side all the time. Like, hey, what happened on that series? And a lot of times they'll come back and they know the problem. They know, I got to work on this. I got to get better at this because I lost my cool. Or, hey, this guy took a cheap shot and then I was trying to get him back for the last seven plays and I forgot what I was supposed to do and all that stuff. So it kind of organically occurs.
it kind of, maybe this goes back to like the sky is green for them and blue for you, but like for you guys, you're, you know, 20 years in, or, you know, you've been studying motor learning or growth mindset for a long time. And then you are day three with one of your athletes. Is like, how are you able to be on the same level, or how are you able to kind of talk the same language with them so that you can be moving them towards a direction that's beneficial for them?
I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but like, I'm on a really low level with this stuff. I mean, I talked to Adam O'Neill about mindfulness, or Shane, or, you know, lots of other people, and they're just so far above me. So I mean, there's just so.
But it's a way higher level than a college freshman.
Yeah. So I think we're just in it together, and you just listen to them, and you assess where they're at. Like, you know, it's a skill just like anything else. So, I mean, yeah, it's just like hitting. I mean, you just assess where they're at and see where you can help and start on that first step, you know. And it's if it's just no concept of mindfulness whatsoever, no interest, no, you know, then you just try to get them to slow down for a minute and look at you, you know, and focus on the conversation, you know, and you start there, you know. If it's they're a lot more inclined, then maybe you talk about breathing, you know, and yeah, you just kind of go from there. But I also think, you know, kind of what you're talking about, how do you introduce this as day one, you know, there's just a lot of power. And like, you know, hey, like I was, you know, this is me, the coach, talking. I was trying to meditate, and my mind was racing, and you know, I couldn't really get focused. You know, have you ever felt like that? And then the player says, yeah, I feel like that all the time, you know. And then you kind of connect and you guide them through your own struggles, and that's just where you're going through it together. And I think that's way more powerful than any script. And when you go through it together like that, again, it's just really easy to assess where you think they're at and where you can help, and it can happen kind of organically. But again, I see a lot of this from Shane. I mean, he does this with me all the time when he's trying to help pull me out of my low level. So
Tom's like, yeah, the college, right, freshman?
Yeah, exactly.
Not at all. Yeah, it's interesting because like I don't, like motor learning, like I don't explicitly talk about that very much with the players unless someone's getting very frustrated, and then I try to explain it to them. It's more like that's how I structure the meetings, and that's how I structure the drills. Like, they're just built that way. And so I don't go into a lot of principles unless I can really feel the frustration, or if a guy's pushing back. Like, he's like, I don't want to do this. I want to do a like last year I had somebody talking about, hey, you know, in different sports, there's more part. Like, they'll do this little piece of a movement, and then they'll graduate to a full movement. And then that's an opportunity to say, okay, well, that's not really true. Like, if you look at the science, this is what it says. Like, let's come by my office and let's talk about this topic, and we'll talk about it for 5 minutes. But like, I very rarely go into like motor learning principles explicitly with the players at all. It's just how everything is built.
And this might not be right, but I think you're selling a little short. When I came into your meeting and saw you work with the tight ends for the 15 minutes you had, those guys were fired up, and I had multiple comments from them that they knew you were going to put them in the exact situation they needed to get good at in a game, and they were going to be ready, and they were fired up for that session of practice. And I think that's part of being an elite athlete. I think they know when something's BS and when something's going to get them ready. And I think they understood, you know, where maybe I think we were on a lower level. You might have to have more of that talk, but it seemed, and again, I may be, you know, your players a million times better. I'm just telling you what I perceived when I came in there, but there was a high level of excitement for those guys to go from the meeting room onto the field and to get after the games. And you had it scored and you had it ready. They knew that they were going to need those moves, and they were going to get to practice them in the exact setting that they needed to.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It just organically happens. Like, hey, here's how we're going to block. And then they go out and do it. And then we talk about it, and then we watch the film, and then we get better at it. But yeah, no, they definitely know. And they know I think intuitively they know that helps them get to where they need to be a lot faster.
Yeah.
So when it comes to applying this mindfulness and stuff, like, I've had moments in like big pressure games where I feel myself slipping into that seeing red. And like, I realize it, like, I've, you know, learned a lot in this podcast and reading books, and I'm telling myself, you know, detach, like reframe this as a challenge, but I don't like reach enlightenment suddenly. I guess
that's
like
Shane's field too.
Yeah. I guess like, how do you apply this stuff in the moment in those high pressure situations? Shane, you got any magic tricks for me? Or like, how do you get your guys out of this?
Dude, you just practice. Like, I was just talking to my wife. I lost my crap in the office today. Like, at the very end, I was going on this long rant, and like, you just, You practice. You just keep practicing. Like, it's a 24/7. Like, if you set an intent, hey, I'm going to work on my mindfulness, then every second of the day is an opportunity. And you're going to have ups and downs, and you just keep monitoring the situation. And you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. But if you're aware of it and you're focused on trying to get better at it, eventually it will come. But it is a long practice. It's not, you know, half a season. It's not one season. It's not two seasons. It's not 3 years. It's not 10 years. You just have to keep working at it. And I think the more you can do it in every aspect of your life, you know, whether it's, you know, I get a lot of mindfulness practice with my wife. I mean, she gives me a lot of practice. I mean, she makes me really pissed sometimes. And my daughter, my 6-year-old daughter, mindfulness all day long. So, I mean, if you work on it in those situations, it'll transfer over into the high pressure situations that you're talking about when you have to have your best performance. But I think it's just being aware and setting an intent. Hey, I'm just going to keep working on this, and I'm going to have good days, I'm going to have bad days. Don't judge it. Just keep working on it, and eventually you'll set a new baseline, and you'll get better each week, each year. It just keeps getting better and better. But it is a lot of practice. It doesn't happen overnight. And even when you, as soon as you think you've got it, you're going to have a really bad day, and you're going to realize that there's still a lot of work to be done.
I think that's huge. And I've learned a ton from Shane on that. And then the other thing I'd be wondering, Bill, is how many times do you feel you get to that emotional state in practice?
Yeah, rarely ever.
So it's kind of hard. Well, you know, so if something feels new, and again, that goes back to the very first question we started with being game-like. So if we put someone in a blocked drill, if they were just in single file line hitting balls, right, and then you put them in a game, like, how are they possibly supposed to feel confident, right? And I feel like emotions are very similar. If practice never pushes you to that point or challenge, and then you feel it in a game, like, how can you expect that athlete to, like, oh yeah, I know exactly what to do? That to me is one of the challenges of practice, like, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, you know, can we get to the states that we get in the game? Because the more we do it, the more ready we're going to feel.
Yeah, maybe we need to, like, bet more money on practice.
I think John just has to get you angrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, next time I'm in a final and I'm just be like, dang it, my wife wasn't aggravating me enough this last month to prepare me for this.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm excited to see that conversation.
By focusing so much on the process than the outcome in practice, does that take away any of the competitiveness in practice? Because I'm like, I know I'm going to make mistakes. I'm okay with it. And I have less pressure than I would in a game. Like, if I'm looking at it so process oriented and I get blocked by Trevor or something, I'm just kind of like, oh, this is what I did wrong. Like, okay, I'll fix it next time. It doesn't really like sting. Or do you think you should kind of bring that same kind of like competitiveness to practice where I like take it personally? Or on the flip side, should it be more like that in a game where I'm a little bit more like evaluating it rather than like angry because I made a mistake?
Well, I mean, I think you want to behave and practice how you want to behave in the game. And I think the process and the result are linked, right? I mean, the result is your feedback for what the process was like. And I think the challenge in learning is not to take that result personally, right? Which is really hard under competition. So if you get blocked, in a match, it could be really easy to go like, I suck, or he thinks he's better than me, or I'm going to lose, you know, like, but none of those are learning statements. Those are all just, you know, real very understandable. You know, I've done it, you've done it, we've all done it, but you don't learn a lot from those statements. So I think the challenge is I got blocked. I was under the ball. I didn't have any range. He really clamped me. Okay, I need to start slow and stay behind this ball. Like that's a good learning process. So, I mean, if you can make those reps in practice mean as much to you in the game and then learn from each rep in practice, like you can take those exact thoughts into the game. So I think the process and the results are linked. And I think the challenge is, how do I take that feedback of the result and just tie it right into my learning loop and get better for the next one, which is obviously easier said than done. But the more you can do that, the more you can stay in the moment and just keep getting better each point, you know, ideally. And what do you think, Shane? Oh, was there a snarky response there? Or what?
No. I was going to say, so in a final, it should still be like a learning environment.
Well, yeah,
sometimes I differentiate it where I'm like, okay, this is practice. I'm learning, I'm building, I'm preparing. Okay, now here's the game.
I definitely understand the difference between learning, okay, I'm really learning a new skill and I'm not worried about the score right now, and then competing. I understand that, but I don't understand why learning and competing are exclusive. Like, because if you think about it, why would you want to go through a match and not learn anything? Like, I don't understand how it's better to just compete. Like, I don't see how you can compete as well as possible if you're not learning through that match, right? I mean, if you're you know, if you have an approach and you're kind of going, and it's a real windy day and you don't learn to slow down a little bit through that match, like why would you not want to learn that? I think they're tied. I think if you're open to learning and getting better each rep, I think you can compete much, much better. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I would agree with what you're saying. And I think you really learn the most in a game, in a match, right? Because that's when you're emotional, when you're at your highest peak. Like you not only have to do the technical stuff, but you have to manage emotions, right? And you have to, swing, it's real. Like it's not practice. You're not just learning. Like you're going to lose the match if you have bad hits. Like it's, and I think that's where real learning occurs, because now you have to add that extra element in, which is, we say you want it to be like practice to be like that, but it's very difficult to get practice to have that heightened response. You know, like we had an interesting thing. I was going to mention this earlier when we were talking about this conversation a little bit, but we had some guys when I was at the Washington Redskins. We brought in some guys from the Navy SEALs, you know, and when they do their training, like they're very growth mindset, but they have like people on the outside screaming and yelling at them so that they learn to deal with those kind of combat emotions to make it real. Like, and a lot of times I get that naturally in football because everyone's yelling and screaming, head coaches and coordinators and everybody's, they don't have the growth mindset. So they really get to experience that, and they have to be able to deal with that and not lose their emotions from that aspect too. And I think that's really important. I think like a lot of coaches that, you know, we may not agree with their methods, but that players learned to instinctually deal with very tough circumstances from the head coach because of how he treats players.
Yeah.
You know, he's very tough on them. He makes it game like the practices are way harder because you're afraid you're going to make a mistake, and you have to deal with that psychologically and still have the growth mindset, which is easy in football because most people that other than me, it seems like have that way. So we're always talking about, this is good. He's putting pressure on you, extreme pressure. When he's yelling at you, that's awesome because you have to be able to notice your emotions going up and then manage them, just like you're going to have to in a game when you get a bad call or something bad happens. And so I think that's a really big part of it. Like that's why sometimes it doesn't transfer from practice to games, because the games are so much more intense.
Yeah, I feel like it should, I don't know if this helps Billy, but I feel like it should like sting either way. Like if you get blocked in practice, you get blocked in a game.
I agree with that.
I don't think it should feel, either way, like it shouldn't feel good. But I think in both scenarios, like if you're not problems, like you're going to want to problem solve. If you're not problem solving, then it's going to happen again.
I think the problem is you just don't care about practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
But that's an excuse. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like it's almost too safe of an environment.
Yeah. And I see what you're saying. Like, oh, I don't care if we lose in practice. I just want to get better. I don't think that way in a match.
I don't know if it's too safe an environment. I just, you know, I think it has to be a safe environment. I think it's really important, you know, but are you challenging yourself enough to change, you know, and then like, how do you navigate through that? Cause I think like those are really good moments in practice. And if you feel, you know, if you feel like you're really pushing yourself and you're getting some failure and you're trying to figure it out and you're able to steer yourself through that, I think that would serve, you know, that serves us all really well, you know, in competition. Cause that's exactly what it's like sometimes, you know, I think.
All right, so we got a couple more to wrap up. So for this one's for Tom. Your first year with a new program at Georgia, wondering if you completely reshaped the culture or did you integrate some of what was already there?
No, I learned a lot from those girls. They were ready to work. They felt a deep sense of pride in terms of being a part of Georgia, and they wanted to. You know, there's a real rich athletic tradition there, and they wanted to add to it. And they were ready to go, and they work. I mean, they put in long days. I mean, from weights 6:45 to tutors wrapping up at 8 p.m. I was really impressed by them. They just wanted the information, and they just wanted to get to work. So, I didn't reshape them. It was just adding what we believed and what we thought was the best way to do things, and them just getting after it and us learning together. So I definitely didn't have to reshape them. They brought a lot to the table.
And then Shane, last time we talked about mindfulness, you gave us some examples. Are you still practicing this a lot? Has anything changed in how you practice it?
As far as my personal practice,
yeah.
Or with
your personal?
Yeah, my personal practice. Yeah, I need to do more. I just found that out today. I try to do it every day. Like I meditate every day. I get up really early in the morning to meditate for like 45 minutes, and then I'll try to do it either at lunch or when I get home. And then just like we were talking about, I try to do it in every aspect. Like if I'm in a meeting with our staff, you know, and I can feel tensions rising or whatever, or I'm trying to work on that and I'm trying to be present in all my conversations that I have, whether it be with players or whether it be with other people on our staff or, you know, over lunch with Tom Black on a Skype thing, whatever it is, I'm just trying to work on it. And there's ups and downs, like I was mentioning, but yeah, I try to work really hard at it. It's something that, I really believe in. And I've really seen the benefits in the last 2 years when I kind of committed to it. I think before that I'd been kind of off and on for like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. And then the last 2 years, I pretty much daily am going to do that. And then I also am going to go on like, I'm try at least once a year to go on like a silent retreat where you get some intensive practice, which is good because it really elevates your baseline. And the other thing I found with like when you go on an intensive silent retreat is that you start to understand what's possible because you get in states of consciousness that you can't get in your normal day life. And so it really motivates you to practice harder. That's been really big for me. It's just seeing what saying, oh my gosh, look at this other level that you can get to if you work at it. And that's really motivated me this entire year to stick with it, no matter what the situation.
I like it. So I think we have two more here. Let's see how this one goes. Do you guys ever question your principles? And I guess I'm asking because sometimes I feel like I'm doing some good stuff with my teams, and then you lose to a team who you see who's like doing juggling in their warm up and using maybe some inferior methods and some frustrating things, and then they come out and they beat you. So I'm wondering, does this ever make you question your beliefs, or how do you, what advice do you have for me?
Tom?
I think you should go first. I think you have more challenges to your principles and the environments you are in. I could be
wrong. Yeah. Momentarily, I might. I mean, I know I really believe in all the stuff that we're talking about. I mean, I do realize that it is a complex system. It's a dynamical system. So there's other factors that go into winning and losing. And some teams may do it, you know, what we perceive as the wrong way, and still get the results they want. But that's just part of it, because you're going to have different levels of talent and you're going to have different levels of luck on a certain day. But to me, I mean, I think it's so grounded in science and it's so mm-hmm. grounded in my personal experience that I know in the long term, if everything is equal, that it's by far the best way to do it. Like you're going to win games and you're going to get the results you want. And you're going to put yourself in the best position to be successful on every play.
I take it in two parts. I definitely do not doubt the principle. I mean, we're human, so we'll have thoughts where we doubt, you know, core principles. But in general, I've got great, great belief in these principles because they are so rooted in science. And unless someone can logically disprove them, which I'm all ears for, these principles are, you know, just embedded in some deep, deep science. So I have a lot of faith in them. But if that example happens where some guy's juggling and on his feet and he says how, you know, he never touches the ball and he still just, you know, beats the tar out of me, then the next question for me is like, what is he doing that I can learn from? You know, what ingredient is just because I believe in these principles doesn't mean I'm executing them perfectly. And the person that's beating me might be executing the principle without even knowing it in a way that's better than me. So I do think if someone's beating the tar out of you, there's something to learn from them. There's something they're doing. And if you can figure that out and apply that into your principles, you're even better for it.
All right. That helps a little bit. all right. To close, what are you guys getting better at right now?
I've been on just a deep dive in trying to understand culture better. You know, I think every year I try to take some concept that I've taken for granted and like really see if I can define it and if I can understand it and if I understand how it's applied. And so for culture, for me, I've really taken a deep dive. I told Shane, I feel like I've learned a mountain of information and have moved 2 inches forward. You know, it's a real deep topic, but you know, just personally, the more vulnerable I can get, you know, in my thoughts and how I approach people and how I speak, and the better learning environment I can create, the better I can be for my players. So that's been a big area of focus for me.
Yeah, Tom's kind of taking me on his culture journey. So that's been, yeah, quite a bit. But that's been really good. And then, you know, I'm still looking at, you know, like we talked about a little bit earlier, like the principles of motor learning, just continuing to discover more about those, like we were talking about with some of the books we've read and some of the conversations we've had with Steve Bain about, just kind of being a little bit more precise with that and figuring out some new models and just trying to work through some of the more technical aspects, which has been very helpful for me, especially in football, because like I'm in kind of a hostile environment when it comes to motor learning. I'm not sure that a lot of coaches believe in those principles. So I've worked really hard in the last couple months to really understand the science behind it so that when conversations come up, I can be more helpful as far as explaining the whys, why these work and why they don't and that type of stuff. So that's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. It was great sitting in and hearing what one of your conversations sounds like. Thanks for letting us record it.
This was G-rated.
Yeah.
The kid gloves are on this one.
Yeah, we want the real thing sometime. We'll have to, maybe you guys can record one and we'll just post it.
Okay, great. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, guys. We learned a lot once again.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Coach Your Brains Out. You can follow us on Twitter at Coach Your Brain or on Facebook, facebook.com/Coach Your Brains Out. If you like the show, please write us a review and spread the word.